from NPR, National Public Radio.
From Boston, says you. A game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy. Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the Carriage House of the Codman Estate in Lincoln, Massachusetts, for Says You, our simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. Never, ever call him on a Saturday, unless it's to remind him it's Saturday, Tony Khan. Don't call her on a Monday. She's much too upbeat for Mondays. Francine Akbar, and nobody calls him on a Wednesday. Wednesday is hoops. Mr. Barry Nolan. Led by?
Hoops Nolan will do it.
To my left, team two. From WBZ-TV, she likes theater, the beach, and people with something to say. Miss Paula Lyons. Class jokester, debate captain, the only second baseman in the conference with chronic rhinitis, Arnie Reisman. And our columnist, our critic, voted most likely to secede, Miss Carolyn Faye Fox. Captain by?
The politically incorrect beach lover.
Miss Lyons. Our game is played in five rounds. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners pen and paper will help. Let's begin by waxing philosophic. For 10 points, please define the following philosophic terms. Carolyn, Epicureanism.
Epicureanism.
Eating everything in sight.
Arnie says it's eating everything in sight, but that's really not quite it. It's about being epically curious about what is culinarily intriguing.
Sort of.
Well, it's appreciating the best and the finest of it's, what life has to offer. In
it's
terms
going for
of
what's pleasurable, as from Epicurus.
Yes.
Seeking pleasure in all things.
I'm going to give you 10 points. Very good.
For tastes.
The one distinction that I did not know, the highest goal is pleasure and happiness, and it's through the Greeks who founded the school of philosophy, but they stressed mental pleasures over physical ones.
I did not know that. Did they tell Epicurus about
that? How silly.
Well, that's why we're here, Richard, isn't it?
Right.
Yes. Tony.
Yes.
What is a deist?
D-E-I-S-T. Right. A deist is someone who believes in God, as did Thomas Jefferson. He was a deist.
This is true.
But who does not believe that having set up the world, he has any interest whatsoever in what's going on in a day-to-day.
That is the best 10 points we'll hear today. Very good. Wow. That is exactly right. God created the universe and its laws and then pretty much retired.
Another way of putting it is all prayers are answered, usually with no.
And Thomas Jefferson definitely was a deist.
He was.
Arnie, categorical imperative.
Categorical imperative.
Well, that's when you say this is the next category.
Right, and you're really strict about it, too.
That is absolutely true, yes.
Let's see. I don't remember this one.
Imperative.
I know I had it but in school, but I don't remember the categorical imperative.
Sort of generalizing and insisting that something is so. Wouldn't it be?
Not that something is so.
Is that part of syllogistic thought?
No, it is not.
No, you're right.
You're on the right road, Carolyn.
Is it in logic? Is it a logic term? Categorical?
Not so much, no. Any help from
the
other side?
We'll take you there. The man, Kant. The place, prolegomena to all future metaphysics. The meaning, I have no idea.
And you know you were most of the way there, actually.
Wow.
Is it Richard, I think, therefore I am?
No, it is. It is indeed Immanuel Kant's term for an absolutely binding moral law. And all rational people must obey that moral law.
It's the fiber of philosophy.
Okay. Yes.
Binds you to, you know, yes,
the
a truth.
Kant.
Francine, try empiricism. E-M-P-I-R-I-C-I-S-M. Empiricism.
It's the philosophy that something is so because it can be shown to be so.
It's demonstrable and reproducible.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So
very good. All knowledge is derived from sensory experience using observation and experimentation. Reason is not enough unless it incorporates empiricism. Paula, Inductive reasoning.
It's the opposite of being deductive.
Inductive reasoning is
ooh, tough. They got serious.
No, it's the opposite of deductive.
So it's using intuition to inductive reasoning.
Well, deductive is when you take a bunch of ideas and add them up to something. You deduce from a whole bunch of stuff. Whereas inductive, you take something and you get something from it.
She's absolutely right. Yeah. I don't know. Somewhere in there was the right answer.
That's why they call it inductive. It's in somewhere.
Any help from the other side? She's
inductive
right.
Inductive is to go from the specific to the general.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. All men are pigs. Arnie's
that's
a man.
That's why when you started with the syllogism, it was a little hard. But see, it's very difficult to grade a philosophical question, isn't it?
Especially on radio.
Yeah. But it is the process of reasoning, whether correct or not, that goes from the particular to the general, from the part to the whole.
Yeah.
And finally, Barry, epistemology.
Epistemology.
E-P-I-S-T-E.
Epistemology is the study of how you come to believe that you know what you think you know. What is the basis for your belief that you actually know something?
Believe it or not, folks, 10 points. Very good. It is the study of knowledge, how it is gained, how much we can know, and its justification.
It's also from the truth you see when you're really angry.
Yes.
You suddenly become incredibly eloquent because you're furious. You know exactly what's been on your mind all those years. Right? That's epistemology.
Let's go on to round two as quickly as possible. The first of the Says You Bluffing rounds, played with a little musical help from our friends, the Dactyls. Paula, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition, the other two blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Barry's team. 10 points up for grabs to Barry, if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Paula, if he can't. A few seconds musically enhanced to come up with a definition for the word argle-bargle.
Where do you find them? You've been reading the comic strips lately.
A-R-G-L-E hyphen B-A-R-G-L-E. Argle-bargle. Folks, our listener challenge last week was to create a word to describe the fortuitous phenomenon of running out of both chips and dip at the same time. And we got hundreds of responses, believe it or not. None more prolific than those of Carol Rosenthal of Santa Monica, California, who came up with not only serendipity, but also termination. Meanwhile, up north in San Jose, California, Paul Kimball was the first of many to come up with snackronicity. I thought it was good. To both, our congratulations. But the winner this week has to be my wife, Laura.
Oh, jeez.
In the audience today, who looked over my shoulder as I was writing the question and said, "What about Frito Compli?" A pup is waiting for you at home, dear, and I think he needs to go out. On Sunday, December 15th, Tea and Symphony, live performances of Says You in elegant surroundings. Check the website for tickets and details, and hopefully we'll see you Sunday, December 15th. The Dactyls. Thank you very much, folks. We've had a few moments with the word argle-bargle. We'll go first to Carolyn.
Argle-bargle. I have two definitions for argle-bargle. The first, it's the rumbling sound of someone's stomach after they've eaten haggis.
Yeah, you got the old...
The argle-bargle.
That would work.
You although, got a spot of the old argle-bargle.
The second definition really is of Scottish derivation. You've seen the way some dogs, small dogs, terriers, will wear some sort of a blanket or covering to keep them warm. And the argle-bargle is the pattern of sort of a kilt-like dog blanket.
Argyle,
Bargyle. Argyle,
that
Bargyle.
Was a
attorneys at law.
Yes, that was it sounds like Argyle Beagle.
Argyle, Barkle.
Barkle.
Yes.
That's the Arkle Barkle. Yeah,
or maybe when you give your dog Listerine, it Argyle, Bargyle, Gargles.
Argyle, Bargyle, Gargles.
A pattern on a dog's coat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kilt-like dog blanket. Was
a kilt-like
right?
dog blanket.
Okay.
Ernie Argobargo.
Actually, it's a noun referring to times when you and another person get so mad you nearly scramble your words. Or it actually can refer to just any heated argument or disagreement.
Just an Argobargo.
Just an Argobargo. They're having an Argobargo.
Paula, Argobargo.
Well, actually, Argobargo.
Argobargo.
Yes.
That's a gargle bargle.
It's a deliberately non-responsive and confusing answer. It's when someone really doesn't want to answer a question, so they just pour out this mishmash of gobbledygook and nonsense, and that's just called an argle bargle.
So in an election year, we're exposed to a lot of...
argle bargles.
A lot of argle bargles. It is a deliberate non-response, a heated argument, or a kilt-like dog blanket. Barry, what do you think?
I believe it's Arnie's heated argument, because I've never heard, objection, Your Honor, argle bargle.
Never have either, actually.
There are a lot of words of Richard's that you've never
heard
used anywhere on the planet.
Yeah, I believe if lawyers had a shot at it, they'd use that one, though.
I do think the heated argument sounds right to me. I'd go with Barry's reasoning.
Francine, is it?
I wouldn't, but I'm not going to step forward.
You're not going to step forward.
But I would choose the conflicting answer.
The deliberate non-response.
But since you're the captain, you get
Hoops,
to go out on the limb.
Hoops, go for it, Hoops.
Just because there's really nothing important at stake, we'll go with Arnie.
Arnie, they say an argle-bargle is a heated argument.
Gee, you know, this time they're right.
Points. The card actually reads?
There's a card?
Yeah.
Oh, it says a heated disagreement.
A heated disagreement. Very good.
I thought my answer was very good.
I liked your answer.
I liked your answer.
I thought it was.
Let's go on to round three. William Summerwork, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, William Summerwork of Renton, Washington, listens to us on KUOW in Seattle. He writes, okay, for 2 years you've had homophonies. Isn't it time for... anagrammies.
No.
Ooh. Isn't that an award show?
Is it Grammy
yeah, it is. I think.
Are they Grammy winners?
These? Please give me two anagrams that describe the following. An example, try this one. Uh-oh. Mr. Rizzo at the Friars Club.
Huh? Roast. Ratzo.
Ratzo roast, exactly. Mr. Rizzo at the Friars Club would be a ratzo roast.
Ah.
Very good. Oh. Two words that are anagrams. Carolyn, okay. A big beer.
A big what?
A big beer.
Beer?
Ooh, audience.
I'm
a
sorry.
Big beer.
A keg?
Regal Lager?
Oh, I knew he was going
to
say.
A beer to drink.
Yes,
beer?
I got to give that to you, right?
Yeah,
a
you
Regal
do.
Lager. It's also a large lager.
A large lager.
Yes, L-A-R-G-E-L-A-G-E-R. Large lager. Tony, returned a borrowed Pampers.
Oh, please.
Returned a borrowed Pampers. Borrowed pamper, a diaper.
There you go.
And then returned a borrowed diaper. Repaid?
Yes, repaid.
Exactly right.
Repaid diaper.
A diaper repaid. Very good. Arnie, try this one.
No, diapers get a deposit.
No deposit, no return.
Oh, waited all day for that one, didn't you?
Yeah. I feel better now.
Yeah.
Good, yes. Glad you got that out of your system.
Go ahead.
Arnie, get us out of this. Priest's curtains. P-R-I-E-S-T-S, priest's apostrophe S. Priest's curtains.
Drapes.
There you go.
Drapes.
Priest's curtains.
Paired drapes.
Ooh, almost.
Padre's
drapes is correct.
Right.
Priest's curtains are Padre's, P-A-D-R-E, apostrophe S, drapes, D-R-A-P-E-S. Francine, instruct a con man.
Teach.
Teach and cheat.
cheat.
Teach a cheat. 10 points. Very good. Teach, T-E-A-C-H, cheat, C-H-E-A-T. Paula, here's the hardest one of them all. Lack of mending fiber.
Lack of mending fiber would be a dearth of thread.
Dearth of thread.
Right. Yeah. So much for the hardest. Very well done. Thread, dearth, T-H-R-E-A-D, and dearth, D-E-A-R-T-H. And finally, Barry, gets up on the wrong side of the bed.
Grumpy.
Something about a rise.
Sleepy.
No, gets up on the wrong side of the bed.
Rises.
No, not rises.
Wakens. Yeah.
Awake.
That's where you want to go.
Wakes.
Askew.
Wakes askew. Very good. A little bit of coaxing there. So we'll give... What are you groaning about out there? W-A-K-E-S-A-S-K-E-W. How much wakes easier could it be? Give them 8 points for that. Wakes askew. And let's go on to round four, which is Barry's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points. Paula, if you can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word figum. F-I-G-G-U-M. Figum.
Figum.
Folks? Why not join us Sunday, December 15th for Tea and Symphony, a live Yuletide performance of Says You. It's fun, food, and frolic with a festive flavor in elegant surroundings. It's a holiday do and a great way to tell that special someone at least we can get some shopping done while we're in town. Tickets are available on the website at www.sayu.org. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U, all one word. So here's hoping you can join us Sunday, December 15th, for Tea and Symphony, a holiday performance of Says You. Thank you very much, folks. We never get the chance on air to introduce one of the most important people in this effort, so we're going to take the time tonight so that you can all recognize the efforts of my co-writer, Mr. Philip Salkind. The bad questions are his.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Our scorekeepers, Michelle Lyons and Michelle Fabish, have been arguing over figum. I don't know what they've come up with, but Tony...
There's no argument here. There's no definition either. I was so offended, in fact, that I was given a blank card that I wrote the following. Yes. Figum is an adhesive made from boiled seaweed.
Oh, a sticky seaweed. Ooh.
Kind of a...
Well, I have a feeling it's what's left. It's what happens to the water when you boil the seaweed. Oh. Something comes out of the seaweed.
You boil it right down to the figum. Ooh. Francine, figum.
Well, this is another old English word.
Ah, okay.
This 15th century, I think, thereabouts. Tricks employed by a juggler.
Tricks employed by a juggler.
This is plural?
He comes out, does his figum, gets off. Barry, figum.
Figum is an English dessert made of plums, raisins, and rum. You may recall its use in the...
we have a visitor. Excuse me, just a moment. Hi, Oz.
You have your dog in here?
This is Otto, the palindromic pup, everyone, please.
Hello, Otto.
For the radio audience who cannot see this, a dog just entered in the premises,
and
he's meeting everyone in the audience. Wasn't that an interesting interruption? I just wanted to know where we go when we go away on Sunday.
It's an English dessert.
It's an English dessert.
Made of plums, raisins, and rum.
An English dessert made of plums, raisins, and rum.
Sounds run those good. By again.
It's a happy kind of dessert.
Yeah. Right.
Kind of a happy dessert. The tricks employed by a juggler or that sticky seaweed adhesive residue, whatever.
Oh, my Lord. I have never heard of seaweed being boiled to create anything sticky.
Really uncooked sushi.
Well, how do you think it sticks to the bottom of the ocean?
Well, it does have stuff. Well, we did learn on our trip, though, to the great Pacific Northwest that there's a lot of adhesive stuff on the end of seaweed so that some forms of it adhere to rocks.
Although I thought that figum was the original name for juicy fruit. Except people thought that it had seeds in it, you know, those little fig seeds, so they changed the name.
Yeah, it didn't sell.
But you think
so is it plums, raisins?
No. It's absolutely not.
And it's not the tricks employed by?
Nah.
Okay. So we're going with the glue made from seaweed. I'm the captain. I guess so.
They've managed to mumble to a decision here, Tony.
Yeah, we're mumbling
along. And they
lot.
Think it's that sticky
they're
seaweed.
They're coming in on figum. You know, I got it. It's not.
It's not sticky seaweed adhesive. What is it?
A juggler's tricks.
A juggler's tricks. Very good. The tricks employed by a juggler. Very good, Francine. Making the score a runaway at the end of the fourth round, so we'll completely ignore the score from this point forward.
Yeah.
Let's finish with a little foray into pop culture titled TV or Not TV. I'm going to reveal the cast of a popular TV show from the golden age of television, one name at a time. The faster you can name the show in which these people starred, the more points you'll amass. An example, if I said Audra Lindley.
Three's a Company.
What? So much for that list.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Audra Lindley, Norman Fell.
Referring to me.
Yes. Joyce DeWitt, Suzanne Summers, and John Ritter indeed were in Three's Company.
I never saw it.
That was golden age.
We know how Arnie misspent his youth. Don't we?
Let's try this one. Carolyn, Billy Mooney.
Wait a minute. I want to get one of these TV things. I never get these TV things.
All right, he's
and
a kid
I want
in a
one
family.
Of these TV things. He's a kid in a family. I know it's not the Partridge Family. Is it?
I don't know.
We don't know.
I know. He's like this little freckle-faced, cute kid, right?
Take a guess.
Lost in Space?
The engineers would like to personally thank you for that.
And so is...
I saw the headphones jump off Fernando's head.
I'm
goodness.
Sorry.
Control yourself over there, will you?
Oh, boy.
Tony, William Tallman, T-A-L-M-A-N.
Cooking show Lost in Spice.
Yeah.
Gale Storm and Drang.
No, Gale Storm and Drang.
I have no idea. They wouldn't let me watch.
They wouldn't let you watch.
I got 15 minutes a week of television. I just held it when it was warm. That was all they let me do. You have a lost cause. Why are you
just get help from your teammates.
Okay.
William
Talmadge?
To William Talman, add Ray Collins. C-O-L-L-I-N-S.
He's a dentist. He was a dentist? Does that sound right? No.
Nope. No help?
No help.
Ray Collins? Mm-mm. To William Talman and Ray Collins, add William Hopper.
William Hopper.
Ooh. I just heard it from the audience.
On.
The other side knows this. To William Talman, Ray Collins, and William Hopper, add Barbara Hale.
Barbara Hale. I can see her now. However, I'm seeing her on a motorcycle.
No.
With this little
she'll
skimpy thing on it, you know, with leopard spots on it.
You and Arnie must have made great roommates.
And to William Talman, Ray Collins, and William Hopper, and Barbara Hale, add Raymond Burr.
Okay, the one of the...
Perry Mason.
Perry Mason. 2 points. Now you got Fernando and Robin just nodding their heads, just shaking their heads.
Okay.
Perry Mason is right. 2 points for that. Arnie, this one is going to be tough. Dick Gauthier, or Gauthier. D-G-A-U-T-H-I-E-R.
Yeah, I know. I know the show, too.
Lassie?
Well, give me a hint, maybe I can help.
Oh, was that something in yo-yo? Whatever the
hell. What do you mean, something
yo-yo? No.
Holmes and yo-yo?
Oh, no, not that show. I know which one you're thinking of.
Holmes that's and right. Yo-Yo?
No.
What are you talking about?
And he knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no.
Go ahead.
Next one.
Dick Gauthier ad Edward Platt, P-L-A-T-T.
Oh, Get Smart.
That's exactly right. Get Smart. 8 points. Isn't it amazing what he does?
All this, and he read books, too. Yeah. Imagine.
Wow. No, only TV guy.
Francine, try this. Misty Rowe, R-O-W-E, Misty Rowe.
Misty yeah. Rowe?
Yep, you're going to have to think.
Doesn't that sound like...
A stripper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think so in old-time
Misty
television.
Rowe.
Keep going.
To Misty Rowe, add Donnie Most. M-O-S-T.
Donnie Most, Happy Days.
Happy Days is exactly wow. right. 8 points.
Who was Misty Rowe?
Misty Rowe was the, she was on roller skates at Arnold's in the drive.
Oh, okay.
Misty Rowe, Donnie Most, Aaron Moran, Marion Ross, and Tom Bosley are all part of Happy Days. Paula, Cynthia Geary.
He's smacking me.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
Cynthia
show.
Geary.
You watch it every week.
I watched it every week?
Yeah.
And what was it?
It was Northern Exposure.
It was Northern Exposure.
Oh,
very
right.
good. Yeah. Cynthia Geary is exactly
I like
right. Cynthia Geary, Darren Barrows,
right.
Barry
she
Corbin,
was,
Janine Turner.
So Paula watched it and you read the TV guide.
Shelley.
Very good.
Shelley. She was Shelley.
Shelley.
And
so
finally, Barry,
all
Lynn Hamilton. H-A-M-I-L-T-O-N. Lynn Hamilton. That was, it's tough. To Lynn Hamilton, add Slappy White.
Slappy White?
Yeah. S-L-A-P-P-Y.
He was one of those guests on the on one of those quiz shows.
You're thinking Soupy Sales, aren't you?
No, yeah. Slappy.
Slappy White.
Is this a quiz show?
No, it is
no,
not.
No. No.
To Lynn Hamilton and Slappy White, add Damond Wilson.
Oh,
Sanders,
oh,
and Son?
Sanders and Sons.
Sanford.
Sanford and Sons.
Sanford and Son is exactly right for, what is that, 4 points? No, 4 points, giving you a total of 92 points, and on this day, a winning total. Congratulations,
thank
Barry.
You.
That is all we have time for this week. Thank you so much to Bob Lyons, my co-executive producer, Gary Mutt, our associate producer, and Fernando Ruiz and Robin Moore, who man the meters. My colleague with Quill and Query is Mr. Philip Salkin. And once every few weeks, we get to remind everybody that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thanks for coming.
Says You is the co-creation of WGBH Radio and Pippet and Finch, Boston. Funding for Says You is provided by this and other NPR member stations and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, making grants to improve the health and health care of all Americans on the web at rwjf.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts, investing in ideas, returning results. www.pewtrusts.com. The Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in individuals, their families, and their communities. On the web at www.wkkf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.